We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hey, welcome everyone to Plant Profits, the Plant Profits podcast with Vern Davis. And that's me. I am your host, Vern Davis. And I'm real excited about my guest. This guest today is known throughout the industry and has made a huge impact in the industry. He's been doing it a while. So it's really cool that he's going to be part of our show today. And he's got over 30 years of experience as a corporate financial professional. He's a co-founder of Corporate Strategy and Finance Advisory Group, focused on global life science industry. He's, like I said, he's been doing this stuff for 30 years, and he's been driving a force behind Matan Associates. They've been doing this and made some tremendous investments in the industry and done a lot of deals in and out of this industry, the cannabis industry, obviously in the life science businesses. My guest today, and welcome to Plant Profits, Mr. Seth Yakutan, who's the co-founder and partner of Katan Associates International, KAI. Man, really, Seth, I'm glad you're here. Thank you for being here. Looking forward to our chat today.
Thank you, Ryan. The pleasure is 110% mine. So.
No, absolutely. That's great. That's great. So, look, you've done a lot. There's a lot we could talk about. When I was getting ready to have this conversation with you, I said, okay, he's probably going to take me in some direction. But let me just, how did you become a VC? How did that happen?
You know, a lot of it had to do with genetics, mm-hmm. right? So my story goes back to my dad, who grew up in an orphanage and ran the streets of Philadelphia. And was just a hustler. You know, once he got out of the army, he became a salesperson for what's now Novartis. It was then called Sandoz, and was really, really, really good. He was the number one salesperson in the world for Sandoz Pharmaceuticals in 67, 68. And he got offered a job as a VP of sales at a company in the 70s called New England Nuclear. And back then, in the olden days, if you wanted to research something, you had to radio label an isotope, a radioactive isotope to it, so you could trace where it went in the body. And his company that he grew globally as part of that team had 70% market share in that industry. Ooh. So anyone who was doing the initial stages of fundamental biotechnology research, including Genentech and all of those early names, Biogen and IDEC before they were, he knew all these guys. You know, so I kind of grew up in that world, you know, and honestly, Vern, it was just blunt force trauma. You know, if you're of my vintage, you look good for 35, but you're of my vintage. You know, these young kids might not remember that in 1991, 1992, there was this thing called a recession, and there was a war, and you couldn't get a job delivering friggin' pizzas, right? So to answer your question, there was a couple venture funds in Orange County, and I knew them. I started showing up at one of them every single day. Every single day.
Just showing up.
Yeah. The girl who was the admin to one of the GPs liked me. Mm-hmm. And after like the 15th day, she was like, well, there's a broom closet down the hall that we rent that has a computer in it. So if you want to sit there and look for a job, we'll let you sit there.
That's crazy, man.
And after about 45 days, one of the GPs is like, are you still here? And I was like, yeah, I've been here every day. Why? And they're like, okay, well, go we'll figure something out. So it, honestly, it was just, it wasn't like.
But listen to this story. Now, I tell my kids this all the time, right? I tell them exactly that. Is that when somebody invites you to go somewhere or to an event where there's people that you've never met, just show up. Just show up. Look, this story, your story begins with just showing up. It's a big deal. I mean, it's such a simple thing, but if you show up, opportunity sometimes presents itself. But you kind of made this happen. You forced the issue.
But it's called, there's a couple people who have talked about that in terms of this notion of making your own luck.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if you look at it like becoming a film actor or becoming a professional athlete, they're just not handing out those gigs. You know, you want to be in a private equity fund or in, you know, a venture capital fund or on Wall Street. They're just not like saying, hey, come on in. Like, we'll take everybody. Like, you got to put in the reps. And a lot of that reps is just going to be getting beat down. And I guess because of the fact that, you know, I literally had a job when I was 9 years old. I just oriented in that direction. So
yeah. Well, it's done well. I mean, you guys have done so much. I mean, as a history, you know, the millions and millions of dollars you've done through M&A transactions, and you know, and just doing early stage stuff with early stage companies when it comes to money and doing deals. And I think that's amazing. How did cannabis become your play, a part of your play?
Through happenstance.
Okay.
After the crash in 2008, we lost pretty much everything, like, honestly. So I was like, oh, I'm going to be one of those guys, and I'm never going to have to work a day in my life, and I'm going to, like, you know, just invest money and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen. I started kind of really coming to the conclusion that equity was what was going to make me wealth.
Uh-huh.
I started going to companies and essentially kind of saying, you know, you don't have a solution. And instead of paying me money and pretending that I'm going to help you, why don't you just give me like 7 or 8% of your company right now?
Yeah.
And you'll have my full attention.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it works, I'm your partner. And if it doesn't work, I'll give you most of that back.
Mm-hmm.
So after literally getting like 300 cups of coffee thrown in my face, someone was dumb enough to say yes. And I got one of those transactions done.
Yeah.
And that company really worked. And then I got another one done. So like 2008 to 2011... I had two therapeutics companies, one which was a bulletin board reverse merger company that we reverse split and re-IPO'd up to NASDAQ. And that company went like this.
Okay.
And another company that was a therapeutics company in the US that I merged into a public company in Australia, and the company did the same thing. So I'm going to answer your question. About December of 2011, these four thugs, like these four microcap beasts, call me.
Yeah.
And they're like, listen, cannabis is going to go recreational in Canada. And we think that we can create a company like GW Pharma. And we just want to do a pump and dump, right? Like, we want to raise up money and we want to get out. And I was like, great, what do you need me for? And they're like, well, we want you to put it together. And I'm like, okay. So I kind of said, look, you guys give me a big giant piece of the vehicle that you're going to use. So I can get out with you and I'll be your Huckleberry. I spent about 4 months. I put together a plan. I went to Israel. I licensed three molecules from Meshulam. And basically in January of 17, I took that company public in Toronto and I raised it $43 million. I originally got into cannabis from the therapeutic drug development perspective. I looked at what GW was doing. I looked at what was going on in biosynthesis or synthetic catalysis of cannabinoids. And I was like, gosh, this is how I'm going to take like a $4 pre-roll. And I'm going to put it behind the counter at a pharmacy and I'm going to charge $40. Like, I'm going to be the guy. 7 years and three failures. Really, I didn't get there. And then to kind of further answer your question, you know, I was kind of looking around in 2019 at the landscape and in California, and I kept literally like smacking into this company called Ease. And at the end of 2019, somebody convinced the CEO to hire me. And I worked inside of Ease as a consultant, helping them in corp dev and capital markets for 10 quarters. And while I was there, you know, Ease raised $130 million, bought 3 stores, turned 10 depots on with MSAs, launched about a $40 million a year private label brand, and acquired a company or merged with a company called Green Dragon, making it like the 13th largest MSO in the United States. And I was involved in all of that. And I will very loudly, you know, take credit for identifying and closing the Green Dragon deal with Corey Azzolino and Mark Woods, who's now was the former counsel, and Corey is now the CEO of the company. So once all of that happened, I was allegedly a genius in Davos because, you know, I had gotten a couple things done and I wasn't an asshole, I think. And a lot of the people on the transactional side in cannabis seem to have an outsized opinion of their relative amount of value vis-a-vis the ecosystem. And I was very cognizant of the fact that there is an ecosystem here and there is a legacy part of the ecosystem here. And there is a you know, kind of a social and gender equity part of the ecosystem here that needs to be addressed. You need to be sensitive to. And my style, you know, is pretty matter of fact and blunt. And I'm certainly willing to help a lot of people. So to answer your question in a very long-winded fashion, that's how I found myself in cannabis. It was through serendipity and kind of a path of, I got two things kind of done and led me to a third and then led me to cannabis. And again, to further answer your question, you know, I'm in cannabis because I see the same dynamics in cannabis that I saw in life sciences in the 70s and 80s, right?
Right, right.
There's so many similarities between the industries, and, you know, the amount of opportunity that exists in the industry is asymmetrical, and the constraints that exist on the industry are overwhelming. For the right person, you know, that's gold.
That's exactly right, and that's what it's become to you, and the reputation obviously precedes you. We're going to take a quick break. I'm Vernon Davis. I'm the host of Plant Profits, and Plant Profits is brought to you proudly by Produce Global. Plant Profits is an award-winning podcast. My guest today, Mr. Seth Yucatan, he is the co-founder and partner at Catan Associates International, KAI. We'll be right back with Seth.
Plant Profits will return so our sponsors can profit from these messages.
Hey, welcome back. This is Vernon Davis. I'm your host of Plant Profits, and Plant Profits is brought to you by Produce Global and Cannabis Radio. My guest today, Mr. Seth Yucatan, who is the co-founder and partner at Catan Associates International, KAI. They've done a lot of deals. He's been the fire, the spark that lights the match. Look, Seth, as we were talking, man, you kind of walked us through how you got into cannabis and why you think it's a place to be based on your past, you know, before cannabis, which I think is very cool. But so why do you like working with early stage, you know, beginners, startup businesses? Why is that your spot?
Because usually that's where innovation occurs. And innovation usually starts with people that are either young or iconoclast. And I really like working with both of those very broadly personality types. Everything becomes new, and being early requires that you need to stay youthful, be on top of everything that's happening. And I think that's why they tend to appeal with me to me.
Yeah. You like that? You say that's where the innovation, that's what you see. Typically, the innovation begins with these startup companies. That's their reason for being. And right? That's their reason for being. That makes sense.
Sure. Look at what's going on in two verticals now that we won't talk about in the context of the show. Look at what's going on in AI.
Yeah.
If you came to me 3 years ago and said the words AI, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Right. Now we all know.
There's another vertical in battery metal recycling.
Mm-hmm.
Battery metal recycling is probably the hottest sector nobody's heard about right now. So all of these phones and computers and cars that have batteries that need to be recycled.
Yeah.
You're either going to have to ship them to space, you're going to figure out how to process them. There's four companies that are trying to do it, and they've all raised a ton of money. The other reason that I like early is that if you see a cohort of companies forming,
mm-hmm.
you can probably see a vertical forming, and you can see how capital is going to line into that vertical. And if you're early enough into that cohort, you can get a ridiculous amount of capital for something. So there's an ulterior motive behind why I like early, which is that capital tends to flow irrationally into things that are early.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're aware of something which is on trend before it becomes a trend, you might be able to get a ridiculous amount of capital into it.
Right. Give me an example of that.
Look at cannabis in 2014 to 16.
Ridiculous. Money was just, it was insane. Yeah.
You showed up with a plant in your hand and a joint, and they gave you $5 million.
And a PowerPoint, and they maybe gave you six.
Man. Right?
No, you liar.
A hand and a heartbeat is all you really needed. So that, you know, there's one.
Yeah. No, you're right. That makes so much sense what you say, because it's true. People want to get in and they want to take a big stake if they believe it's going to actually happen. And there's a lot unknown, so it is a risk. And for a guy like you, that makes it attractive.
It may be. It just, you have to know where the stones are so you don't step in the water. It's kind of like if I'm a defensive coordinator, except I'm not playing, you know, I'm not coaching for Notre Dame. I'm coaching for Nebraska. Or I'm coaching for USC. Who needs the help, by the way? USC Trojans, you need the help at defensive coordinator. Just saying, I'm taking calls now.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, Seth? They may need some Jimmys and Joes, too. You know, he may be coordinating his ass off. You know, you never know. But that could be the case. So when you're evaluating, you're getting into this space, and you're trying to find the right company, or the right company calls you and you need to go evaluate them. What are you looking at? You're lifting the hood up. What are you looking for and what are you looking at?
I'm looking at a couple things. For me, you know, I'm kind of looking at who's driving and how that decision-making matrix is delineated. If I don't like who's driving, and I don't believe that there's linear amounts of decision making, that's really hard for me. So sometimes you'll have a CEO who's, you know, owns 6 or 7% of the company, and the investors own 40 or 50% of the company. The CEO is working for the investors. So a lot of what I look at is how much decision making authority does the captain have? That's very important to me. Another thing which is becoming more important to me, or less important to me, is what's kind of the toggle function between exit or sustainability? Meaning that, you know, a lot of these, there's a class of people, there's an age group of people now that I think are under 40 that have been conditioned that they must exit a business, right? You must exit. You must take money and you must exit. I'm sitting in a coffee shop. The guy next door to me has 7 dry cleaners in my neighborhood. Okay.
Yeah.
He's driving a Rolls Royce. He doesn't care about an exit. So, you know, the other thing that I kind of look at in terms of how realistic is the sustainability level of the business, meaning can they generate cash flow or sell product, okay, versus you're just gaming to the exit. I've done a lot direct to consumer marketing companies. I've been involved in probably 6 of them now.
Okay.
Normally they're difficult to exit because either whatever marketing modality they use gets discovered or isn't transferable to scale, or their cost to acquire a customer doesn't allow them to operate profitably until some level. So, you know, one of the things that I definitely look at is this geared that it must exit? And if it doesn't exit, is there a path? Because any investor is just going to want one thing. They're going to want a return. It's the table stakes. So those are two things that I definitely look for in terms of, you know, an initial kind of reads. There's probably more, but those are two that are definitely coming to mind.
How far down an initial team do you look? The captain, I got that. You know, the captain and what else from the people side of the business?
Is there an operator? Usually most companies that you look at kind of require two or three things. You need an outside person, you need an inside person, and you need someone to run the numbers. And if you're selling product, you need someone to own that. So do you have three or four team members that can do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very rare that you have somebody who's, you know, a brilliant scientist that can go raise money and talk to the financial markets and create financial statements.
Right.
So do you have adequate coverage to be able to scale and replicate what you're doing and get out there? So usually I will look at the totality of the team and see what the totality of that team looks like.
We're going to take a quick break, Seth, and then we're going to come back and I'm going to really dig into what you're looking at now. This is Vern Davis. I'm your host of Plant Profits, and Plant Profits is brought to you by Produce Global. My guest today is Mr. Seth Yucatan, who you all probably know, co-founder, partner of Catan Associates International, KAI. And we're having a cool conversation. We'll be right back.
Plant Profits will return so our sponsors can profit from these messages.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Vern Davis. I am your host of Plant Profits. Plant Profits, an award-winning podcast brought to you by Produce Global. Having a conversation today with Mr. Seth Yucatan, who's the co-founder, partner at Catan Associates International, KAI. So, Seth, this has been a really educational, good discussion here, but what happened to 23? You know, you can't get money. Was it predictable in your mind? What are you looking forward to next year, and what's going to cause any optimism?
We're talking specifically about cannabis?
Yeah, let's talk cannabis.
So cannabis is constrained federally, and what that means is, as a result of that, most of the capital that would be available to any other company just isn't available to cannabis. So you don't have public equity capital. You really don't have strategic capital. You really don't have financial buyers. So you have a kind of a finite amount of capital that's allocated to the sector. What happened in 2023 was probably the most precipitous and rapid shift outside of some form of environmental 9/11 Lehman Brothers event that I've witnessed relative to capital drying up in a market. So the first answer to your question is there's the size of your N is very small. Like the size of your N of really global cannabis investors is maybe 75 or 100. And half of them are, you know, equity funds that haven't done that well because they just haven't been able to exit. And the other half are institutional debt capital funds who effectively have a real estate type of mandate, which is, I want to be securitized by an asset with yield.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have a robust capital or public equity market, stocks don't trade on technical fundamentals. And event data will cause broad sell-offs in markets as opposed to performance data. Mm-hmm. So last summer, you kind of saw a couple of shakeouts. There was a lot of question about what was going on in California. Debt capital, which was on a legacy basis 12 to 15%, went from that range to 17 to 20%. So the cost of capital got more expensive. after the summer, there was hope that SAFE was going to happen. SAFE didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Stocks sold off by another 30%, and everyone just said, I'm going home. So what really happened last year was a finite number of people that had money decided it's either going to get way more expensive or I'm just not putting it out. Because my assumptions about me putting money into a company and getting liquid just haven't worked. I've seen that change. Money is coming back into the market now.
You're starting to see that?
Yeah. I'm starting to see that. I've started to see that in the third quarter of this year, significantly in the debt capital side, definitely on the private equity capital side for later stage privates that are functioning, which I decide is or define as raising capital, being profitable. Mm-hmm. Very difficult at the early stage still.
Yeah.
For the second question, I am extremely dissatisfied by governmental leadership in the United States at every single level. At every level. I don't care what party you ascribe to or what religious affiliation you have or what, you know, socioeconomic group that you have. We are not being well served. So as a result of that, and if you want to debate that, please, but as a result of that, I don't have a great deal of confidence, you know, in our current leadership. Right. If they can't figure out how to agree on a budget and both parties are fighting each other, I don't necessarily see cannabis jumping to the front of the line in terms of approval.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm optimistic that maybe a DEA letter comes out. I'm optimistic that maybe SAFE occurs. I'm optimistic that maybe someone in Washington, D.C. grows a brain and decides that figuring out a way to capitalize the government as a result of cannabis taxation
right. is
going to be a lot better than demonizing the plant in whatever way you want to demonize it, whether it's through incarceration or whether it's through religion. I don't right. really care. So I'm optimistic that something happens there. And if you get a nano signal, it's just going to make the market irrationally exuberant. If you get something like SAFE or a DEA letter, you're going to see stocks go up by 25 to 40%. And you're going to see a bunch of people run in with their pants down and say, where do I put money? It's going to.
So the rescheduling, you're optimistic. What do you think the timing for that? I mean, to your point, it's in line with a lot of important things.
Something has to happen before the presidential election.
The elections kind of kick off in April, always.
Something has to happen before, you know, before November. And something has to happen because, you know, Biden's going to need to do something to convince people that he's not a robot.
Right.
And Trump's base seems pretty strong, irregardless of what accusations they're going to provide against him.
Right.
And if they actually seem like they could coalesce around doing something, and if you believe, you know, that he's a broad capitalist, that doesn't sound like a bad agenda platform to run off if he can then assuage the conservative Christian element that's, you know, that we're not promoting Satanism.
I guess it doesn't matter that he's been, you know, that he has been just vehemently against cannabis. I guess that doesn't matter. I mean, you can.
We'll see. Listen, man. Maybe his ass sitting in a jail cell for a couple of months is going to change his mind. I don't know.
Maybe
he's going to see the Holy Spirit in there. I don't know.
Oh my God, I don't know either, man. So let me ask you: is your money off the sidelines in the cannabis space?
I don't invest a lot of money. Okay. Usually, when I invest money, it's not a good signal. Most of what I've done since 2008 is securitized assets, bonds, not a lot of stocks. I do have money in the sector. I do own three or four of the larger public cap companies just because I think they're long-term holds. You know, normally what I'll do is put something together and have a little skin in the game as part of a broader syndication for better companies. You know, I do own equity in probably six companies in cannabis currently that are all, in my opinion, you know, better later stage privates. You know, there's one public that I'm involved with in terms of Glasshouse that I think is great as well.
So Glasshouse is awesome.
That's just, I can't stop saying enough about that company in a positive way.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome.
I do think to that point, though, that, you know, there's been a lot of distress. A lot of people have gotten beaten up. You know, if this is your entry point into cannabis, you couldn't be at a better time. There's an investor that I work with who I have a tremendous amount of respect for named Aaron Edelheit out of Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. You know, who, if you read his Substack, you know, he's screaming from the hills, now is the time. Now is the time. I do agree with him.
Because you think there's going to be news. There's going to be an event that's going to change the dynamics of the industry.
It's different than that, Vern. It's why I'm in the vertical.
Okay.
I am a capitalist. I am not a philanthropist. I am a capitalist. If you put me on a street corner in downtown St. Louis, I'm going to figure out a way to survive and make money. I'm going to get out of there. I'm going to own that block. Okay.
Right.
And the opportunity that I see in cannabis is if we get some form of DRE or unscheduling is bigger than any opportunity I might have ever seen in my life, because you have billions of dollars that cannot invest in a sector that's doing $70 billion a year in revenue and maybe more with the black market that continues to grow. So, you know, my fundamental thesis, if I run back home to my training is that everyone that's in alcohol, tobacco, pharmaceutical, broad CPG, and wellness is competing against cannabis for consumer share of wallet. And cannabis consumer share of wallet is robust and it's not going away. So if you take the handcuffs off of Unilever, and Unilever can go buy another $2 billion consumer product company in GTI that they don't know how to operate, they don't know how to run, they don't know what to do, that's going to happen. Timestamp, well, Wednesday, November 15th, 9:30 a.m. Pacific, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of when. And, you know, for me, the reason that I'm leaning in is that, you know, I believe that there are 75 to 100 great, I'm not saying good, great lower middle market companies in the United States that are doing between, you know, 10 and 75 million in revenue that are profitable, that are either going to be acquired by bigger platforms or are going to be the basis of traditional private equity platform roll-ups. And I am telling you, I am talking to every single one of them. And I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah.
Because when they go to buy or sell, I want to be the very first person that they think of or that they call or that they DM or that they text, because I'm already texting every single one of them.
Yeah.
And I'm telling them, here's what you should do and here's who you should be talking to and here's reality. So the game that I'm playing is I want to be, when that moment occurs, when that catalyst occurs, I want to be one of the 15 or 20 most important people in cannabis on the planet. We'll stop. No disrespect, no ego, nothing. I'm in the game. I am training to be Terrell Owens. I love me some me.
Okay.
Just gonna win Super Bowls. That's it.
I love it. I love it, baby. Just score touchdowns. I love it. I love it. You gave me some juice on that. I like that. I liked that a lot. That was great. That was awesome, man. I tell you, I got like 25 questions I prepared to ask you, and we got to go. Had a blast. Thank you, Seth, for showing up, right? Thank you for showing up, brother. I really appreciate that. Seth Yucatan, co-founder and partner of Catan Associates International, KAI, doing his thing. And he told you he's going to be one of the 15 to 20 most important people in cannabis. When the walls come down, he's going to be the guy. I love that. Well, thank you all for joining us here on Plant Profits. Plant Profits, like I said, is brought to you by Produce Global and Cannabis Radio. Check us out. Any platform you get your podcast, check out Plant Profits. Subscribe, brothers and sisters, subscribe to Plant Profits. We'll appreciate that. Produce Global, my company. protisglobal.com. We're on social media platforms, all of them. Really, check us out. Go to our website and take a look at how we are building companies, how we're changing lives. It's real important. Go check that out. I'm Vern Davis. I'm your host of Plant Profits. Until next time, cheers.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.